Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:49 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 10th. Another interesting day today. There was a number of rather important news items, but I think one that was front and center for a lot of people will have been the CPI figures in the USA that came in a bit lower than expected. In fact, we also had CPI figures for Japan a couple of days ago, and they also came in slightly below expectations. What is interesting today, though, is the difference between the performance of the 10-year and the 2-year on in the U.S. Treasury markets. The 10-year took about 3 basis points off the yield, so it's back below 3%. And it did recover off the lows intraday, but it was still down in negative territory. This continues to look like a consolidation in the region of 3%, and yesterday was a pretty encouraging day from the perspective of the bond bears. But at the same time, it's still a consolidation, and until we have a clear and sustained move above 3%, then we're not going to have clear confirmation of a return to supply dominance. But when we look at the 2-year, then we have a rather different story. So when we look, because the 2-year has been where the focus of attention has been for rising interest rates for most of the last year. And the yield was at a new high in here today. It's up to 2.53% to be accurate. But the fact that this yield was higher and the 10-year yield was lower has contributed to a further tightening of the yield curve spread. And it's now down to 43.75 basis points. Well, there's a clear downtrend, and there's a clear progression of lower rally highs in this long-term chart. Generally speaking, when you have a flattening yield curve, it's supportive of the view that we have a healthy economy and that the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates because they have confidence that they can do so without causing alarm among the population that we're about to enter a recession. But and considering that the economy is at full employment, that the stock market has been rallying for 9 years already, well, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that the Fed might be concluding that this is the time to be reloading the interest rate gun, and they've told us as much. It isn't until the yield curve is negative that we have a lead indicator for a future recession. Well, it's at 43 basis points, so it's not negative, but we can see where the trajectory is going. It is going to go negative at some point, and that then will be the time to be particularly cognizant of where are we in terms of the stock market, how consistent is the trend, and where are stops, if indeed people have stops at all. One of the big things that happens after a period of volatility is that people say, oh well, I've just been stopped out and volatility's come back down, and if I only I hadn't had the stop, well, the price is probably above now where it was when I was stopped out, so I shouldn't have a stop at all. And that is the wrong way to think, that when you have an uptick in volatility and one is stopped out, well, unfortunately, sometimes that does occur. But it also tells us that there was a loss of uptrend consistency. If one were placing stops in consistent trends and those stops were triggered, it tells us that there has been a change to the consistency of the market. And when that occurs, we have to then go back and think about, well, what exactly is happening? And when we look at, for example, the S&P 500, it had a very large pullback in February relative to the very small pullbacks that it had all the way through 2017. It was a trend in consistency. It suggested that we are into a medium-term corrective phase for this market. The S&P was up an additional 22 points in here today, which isn't far off 1%, and this is a new higher reaction. A new higher high within this reactive phase, to be more correct. There is also a progression of higher reaction lows evident since the beginning of February. So I think the base case has to be that this is a period of support building within the context of a medium-term correction, and medium-term corrections can last for anything from 6 to 18 months. That if So there are two potential outcomes. We know that the yield curve spread is contracting. If this is on the shorter end of the 6 to 18 month horizon for a medium term correction, then that holds out the prospect that we're going to get an additional big leg on the upside, which would be an exhaustion rally within the context of a very impressive decade long almost trend. That would then roll over into a much larger pullback, which could take a few years to roll out before the secular bull market is re-established. If, on the other hand, the market goes sideways for a year and a half, and at that point, at the end of that point, then the yield curve spread becomes inverted, well, then we would have a type 3 top formation, and then that would also portend a somewhat much larger pullback relative to what has so far been approximately a 10% pullback. So what happens next is, I think, rather important. If the market can simply range for 6 months and then break out at some point in the latter stage of perhaps Q3, then we have the prospect of a final blowout rally on this already impressive medium-term trend. So, and I think that there is a possibility that that is the case, and I'd be willing to give that prognosis the benefit of the doubt, simply because we're seeing an increasing number of markets and large shares, globally oriented shares, breaking on the upside. Apple, of course, is one of those. It is still the largest share in the world, and it has broken upwards emphatically from what had been just about a 6 month range. Then you have the Russell 2000, and this is the smaller caps, but the high was at 1,615 on the 26th of January, and it's at 1,602 right now. If it can sustain a move above 1,600, then we can conclude that this range, which has a clear upward bias to the trading, has been resolved, and that it is back on a recovery footing. The Russell has been a clear performer, not just since 2016, but since 2000. There is a clear progression of higher highs. The smaller cap shares generally do tend to do better, and the fact that they did not have a much larger pullback than technology, for example, or the wider market, suggests that the liquidity-fueled environment that has been one of the primary animating forces behind this bull market so far is still active. And we see a similar pattern when we look at mid-cap indices right around the world. So the FTSE 250 has pushed back above the 20,000 level and is back testing the highs that we saw in January. The MDAX in Germany is back above the 25,000 level. It only very briefly traded below it, and this looks like a step within the context of a reasonably consistent medium-term advance. The second section index in Japan did spectacularly well from the middle of 2016 through to the peak in January, and it is now in, I think, more than any of the other small to mid-cap indices, it does have evidence of perhaps a somewhat lengthier process of consolidation. Well, in Japan, we've already seen, I posted the chart yesterday of wages pushing on to new high ground. The Bank of Japan is committed to its quantitative easing program. The yen is rather in the balance. It has strengthened up a little from the 110 area in here today, but so far not in a particularly dynamic manner. And I think that this is a rather interesting point, because 110 is a bit of a psychological level, and it coincides with the region of the trend mean. If the dollar can sustain a move back above the trend mean, then we're back in a period of not just short-term demand dominance or short covering, but we could start talking about medium-term demand dominance. With the somewhat lower CPI figures, the euro was a little bit firmer in here today, and this is the first evidence of a pause in what has been a very persistent short-term decline. As I've been saying for the last few days, this is a rather important Rubicon here. It represents the region of the trend mean and for what had been a generally consistent advance over the course of the last 18 months. If the euro is going to demonstrate more than short-term support, it is going to have to rally in a dynamic manner back above the 120 area, and there isn't a great deal of evidence to support that just yet. The other currency that is looking rather interesting right now is the Australian dollar. It's been dribbling higher against the US dollar for most of the last 2 and a bit years, and it dropped over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks back to actually break the progression of higher reaction lows. But we're starting to see some evidence of support coming back in. And this is the first dynamic move for the Australian dollar since really since the beginning of April. Now, upside follow through tomorrow would break that downward bias, and it would begin to confirm that we're getting some short covering coming in. The weakness of the Aussie dollar has been a benefit for the ASX 200 in nominal terms, and it is back testing those peaks that we saw in early January. So quite what happens with the Australian dollar in the next few days is probably going to have an impact on whether the Aussie market can break up and run away from this psychological 6,000 level. When we look at the Australian market over the course of the last 20-odd years, that 6,000 level has been something of a Rubicon. It didn't spend very much time above it in 2006 and 7, and it has been struggling to get above it for the last 3 years. So this is a big level for the Australian market. And the banks continue to represent a significant weighting within the ASX 200, and they have at least stopped going down. The Royal Commission is beginning to move on to the insurance sector, so it's taking some of the pressure off the banking sector. I think it is worth pointing out that the PE on the banks is down now to 12, and it has a yield of 6%, so that is going to be encouraging to some value investors, but perhaps there will be some urgency to looking at the banks if they can sustain a move back above the trend mean. And I think so far we haven't had anything in the way of clear upward dynamics for this particular index. So that hasn't created the kind of urgency that would get people to commit readily to supporting the banks, and not least because we just don't know how big fines are going to be once the Royal Commission has come through with some of their conclusions. Then in Malaysia, we've had the Razak government has fallen and been replaced by a coalition led by Mahathir. So the KLCI index, the government bonds, even the ringgit are not trading, haven't been trading since the 8th, but the iShares MSCI ETF is. And it pulled back really quite sharply from the $35 area, but it has bounced off the lows. But it's still subject to a fair deal of volatility. It wasn't able to hold its rally intraday today. There is a very big question whether a coalition of four parties can, in fact, sustain a government through to its conclusion. The fact that the Prime Minister has to be freed from jail is before he can take office is obviously not something that is going to instill a great deal of faith that this is going to be a sustainable government structure. They really do have to race to improve governance and to put to stamp a very clear, I think, willingness to make some big changes. And if they can do that, well, that would help to support the market. But when we simply look at the clear chart pattern, we've had a very clear downward dynamic from a previous area of resistance. It is going to have to sustain a move back above the trend mean in a dynamic manner in order to signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, when we look at what's been going on in the commodity markets, the oil market was up in a dynamic manner yesterday. And when we, I think, pay attention to what exactly is going on, that there is a backwardation, and that suggests that there is a supply deficit. There was a lot of people yesterday talking about Iran, but US inventories of oil have been declining. So there is a supply deficit right now. And one of the, I think, important points that was happening last year was that a lot of the private equity money that had gone into drilling was looking for a return, that they didn't want to keep investing in new drilling until they started seeing some money coming back out of the ones they'd already drilled. So, what that suggests is that there was not a great deal of new drilling getting done, and that has contributed to this supply deficit. It's going to require additional new money coming into the market to ramp up drilling even further to really help to bring this backwardation back into a contango. But there is a short-term overbought condition, and the price is picking up pace. So this is something to keep a particular eye on. There are no real other signs of an impending recession, but surging oil prices represent a tax on the global economy. And when we look at some of the economic surprise indicators, there aren't many that are going up. Rather, there are a significant number that are coming down, and that suggests that economic activity is not coming in at quite the same pace that economists had been hoping for. So the surging oil price, certainly when we think about where the price was trading back in the middle of 2017, then it was at $44. Well, another $7 range, and it will have doubled in a year, and that will have knock-on effects. Particularly when those figures start to roll through on a 12-month rolling basis over the course of the next few months. So that also holds out the prospect that inflationary pressures could start to rise in the second half of this year. Then when we look at the continuous commodity index, then it is now right at the upper side of the range and was pushing through to test the high from back in 2016 in here today. This does look like an explosion waiting to happen. It appears to me to be at least only a matter of time before we see a clear upward break. With a little bit of dollar weakness in here today, the gold price was up about $7. We're seeing initial signs that the region of the trend mean is holding, and most particularly the $1,300 area where we've seen bounces previously. So far, this is not nearly as dynamic a move as we've seen previously, and upside follow-through is definitely going to be required to confirm at least short-term support in this $1,300 area. When we look at where the breakout point is likely to be, it's probably going to be above 1,360. That represents the upper side of this short-term range. It's also the upper side of what is an evolving 5-year saucering pattern. If it can clear the $1,360 area, well, then I think we can conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for the medium term. So I think gold is really rather interesting at this particular juncture. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.